Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, The Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed Podcast brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 427. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Tool Shed Pod. Continuing my Dynasty and Prospect Ranking Series with Dynasty Catcher Rankings, and I have a great guest in the Tool Shed with me this episode to break it all down. He is the lead prospect analyst and senior baseball editor at RotoWire, one of the best in the business, Mr. James Anderson at RealJRAnderson on Twitter. James, how's it going, bud?
It's going great, Eric. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, always enjoy, you know, podding with you. I know we, between my pod and your pod and even, you know, Welsh's pod, we always, you know, several times a year we find our way, you know, in the same podcast room. And today we're going over Dynasty Catcher, and then what you and I were just talking before we hit record about how this position is, you know, for each of us kind of fun, like one of our more favorite positions to talk about. And I don't think many people say that, you know, obviously catcher, I mean, outfield, pitcher, shortstop, those are the three really super sexy ones, but catchers, you know, on the rise and has a lot of good young talent, both that have already debuted and, you know, in the minor leagues as well. And we'll kind of break it all down today. So we'll be going through our top 30 each. Talking, you know, some players, some debates, and maybe players that we might differ on a little bit, you know, give you some good players to buy. So a good mix of stuff going on in this episode. But let's start right with our top 10 each at this catcher spot. So, James, who you got in your top 10?
Yeah, my top 10 is number one, Cal Raleigh, 2, William Contreras, 3, Shea Langeliers, 4, Drake Baldwin, 5, Ben Rice, 6, Samuel Basayo, 7, Rainiel Rodriguez, 8, Agustin Ramirez, 9, Hunter Goodman, 10, Will Smith.
All right. I also have Cal Raleigh 1. I mean, I think he's the, you know, pretty solid one for everybody. I have Ben Rice too, and everyone knows I'm a huge Ben Rice guy. I go William Contreras 3, Samuel Basayo 4, Agustin Ramirez 5, Drake Baldwin 6, Hunter Goodman 7, Shea Langeliers 8, Will Smith 9, and Adley Rutschman at 10. I mean, obviously, I think everyone knows that Cal Raleigh is number one. I think he's pretty clearly the number one. You know, he's still, you know, on the young-ish side. I mean, you know, he'll be 29 next season. So it's not like he's over 30 yet, but clear number one after what he's been doing the last couple of years, especially in 2025. But James, I feel like after Raleigh, I feel like it really opens up, and there's kind of like a pretty sizable tier where you can make a case for, you know, really 5, 6, maybe even 7 of these guys as the number two. And I've seen a wide range of rankings, you know, 2 through 7 or 2 through 8 or so. And I ended up on Ben Rice and you on William Contreras. So, you know, how close are all these guys for you, and really what put William Contreras ahead of, you know, the Langeliers, the Baldwins, et cetera, of the world?
Yeah, so for me, it was really close between Contreras and Langoliers at number two. Like I really feel strongly about that being my top three, like Rally and then Contreras, Langoliers in some order. I'm really, you know, obviously looking for skills with these guys, but I think the biggest separator at the catcher position is playing time. And so, you know, if you're kind of just looking at who are projected to have the most plate appearances at the catcher position, that's kind of almost close to what my rankings are going to look like. And the big difference is like Ben Rice, valuing him because I don't think he's going to have catcher eligibility after this year necessarily. Like he might, but it's kind of like I'm valuing Ben Rice a little bit differently from the other guys in the top five, where I think there's a very strong possibility that he's a first baseman only next year. And so he's a very unique case among these guys. I think Baldwin is just, you know, he's like my favorite of the guys who are just entering their primes, but Contreras and Langoliers, health permitting, are going to be right up there with Sal Perez and Cal Raleigh among plate appearances for these guys. I think Contreras and Langoliers are also pretty close to five category catchers at this point. You know, stealing like six bases basically at the catcher position is a big deal. And so yep. I think Contreras along with Raleigh, along with Langoliers, all are guys that are going to steal over five bases. And the improvement that Langoliers has made with his hit tool, like if I were to pick one of these guys in the top five to just jump to like another stratosphere this year, I think Langoliers would be the pick. But I also think Contreras is just the safest. And like, I think he's got a high ceiling. He's finished his catcher one as recently as a year ago, but I also think he's got the highest floor of the non-Rally guys.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, when you're looking at, you know, Contreras in a down year, still had, you know, 89 runs, 17 home runs, six steals, hit 260, 355 OBP, and still had some pretty good metrics under the hood. Yeah, it wasn't 2024, you know, like when he finished as the C1, like you mentioned. But yeah, I think Contreras is very, very safe with, he might have the best blend, you know, outside of Raleigh, like you said, of, you know, upside and floor. You know, Langoliers, he's one where I feel like I'm always too low on him. I'm even thinking that right now where, you know, I have him, what, like seventh in, at this position. Yeah, you look at the improvements he made with the contact. That was always the issue. But, like, both in zone and overall have gone up every single year from being downright terrible to bad to all right to actually now both above average, you know, by about, you know, 1.5% to 0.5% above, better than league average. So I'm kind of wondering if I'm valuing Langoliers too low still. I mean, I look at those averages from pre-2025 and how he was like, you know, 220 with a sub-300 OBP. But, yeah, I mean, the power's good. The lineup context is pretty good. That Athletics lineup's really good. Cut the K rate by 7.5%. I think
move him up.
Talking myself into ranking him a bit higher. Yeah, that's what I'm like. That's why I love doing these. You know, like in the past, you know, Clegg and I would always like kind of every episode, one of us or both would be, as we talk through it, would be like, oh, yeah, maybe I want to rank this guy higher or sometimes lower too. So that's why I love doing this and getting at different people on and, you know, different looking at different rankings and kind of talking it through, because, you know, I kind of make some adjustments on the fly. So yeah, I think I'm undervaluing Shea Langoliers. I mean, he's still only 28, so a lot to like there with Shea Langoliers. But like I said, like Ben Rice, I do share that, you know, concern. Like, is he catcher eligible beyond this year? And there's a few of these guys, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, that, you know, you kind of have that concern of how long do they have that C, you know, eligibility next to their name. But man, if he, even for this year, like he could finish as maybe even the C2 this year or push Cal Raleigh with, if he gets a full year worth of plate appearances as, you know, first base for the Yanks, assuming they don't bring anybody in, that's to be phenomenal if he can get 650 plate appearances. But that probably means he loses catcher eligibility, but, you know, fingers crossed he can get at least 20 starts in there behind Austin Wells to keep eligibility for at least one more year. But we shall see. But yeah, like, those are just a few guys that are in that number two mix. I mean, if you, you know, said that your number two was Drake Baldwin, I wouldn't have any issue with it. Or even, you know, people love Hunter Goodman, know, Will Smith, kind of a little bit on in the older side now. He's like the old man of this group, but he was number two or in that discussion for a long time. Then you got, you know, Bisaccia. So, you know, a lot of fun catchers, you know, in this kind of top couple of tiers that are all, you know, fairly young, all kind of like 24 to 28 for the most part. So I think this position is in a really, really good spot. But one guy here in your top 10 that I want to get your thoughts on. I already kind of discussed him in my prospect version of this position, but you have Raniel Rodriguez at number 7. So I'm assuming, since you have a guy that was just in, you know, low A, 18, I think he's 18 or 19 years old, already in the top 10, you must be, you know, maybe all in isn't the best term, but you must be obviously pretty darn high on Raniel Rodriguez.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's if you just remove stolen bases, I think you could rank him as like a top 5 prospect for fantasy. He's capped as like a 4 category guy, but there's not really anyone his age who I feel as strongly about the hit and power combination as I do Raniel. And I'm hoping, like, I in the spots where I've got him, I'm hoping they move him off a catcher, and, you know, he comes up and maybe he's still catcher eligible when he debuts, but like, I'd love for Raniel to just be an everyday DH, maybe play a little first base, maybe even catch a little bit, but like, it's all about the bat. And I think catcher, I picked to come on this episode just cause I love talking catchers and kind of catcher strategy. And I think catcher dynasty strategy is just so wide ranging, because you and I both play in different formats where like the 16th or 17th or 25th ranked catcher has vastly different values from league to league, depending on how many catchers each team's starting. Raniel in any format, if it's the shallowest format or the deepest format, is extremely valuable. And then some of these other guys, you get more into kind of format dependent, like, oh, I only think this guy's like the 14th best catcher at his peak, so what does that even matter in like a shallow league? Like with Raniel, if it's a shallow league, he could end up being the catcher one someday. And obviously in a deep league, like, I've got him ranked as a easy top 15 prospect on my next update, so like, I love him in that situation too. But just, you know, potential plus hit, 70 power, really, really exciting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, he's coming off a year, 276, 399, 555 slash line, 22 doubles, 20 home runs, 54 walks to 65 strikeouts between complex and low A, and then he got a cup of coffee in high A end of the season, again, as an 18-year-old, and he'll turn 19 in a couple weeks here, so he'll play all of next year, age 19, and maybe even get double A. So yeah, definitely very, very exciting future for Raniel Rodriguez. Yeah, he's another one. Like, there's a lot of guys that you just kind of question, will they be catchers long term? Because, you know, with him, St. Louis just has so many good catchers. St. Louis loves catchers. You know, that's why Ivan Herrera, another one that you question how long he has catcher eligibility. And I think he has actually already lost it in some of those leagues where the threshold is on the higher end. But then you got like Jimmy Crooks, you got Leonardo Bernal. You know, they just have so many good catchers coming up through. So. You can't play them all at catcher, obviously. So, I'm very high on Rodriguez as well. I have him, you know, as a top 25 prospect right now. But, yeah, I love seeing that you had him that high in your dynasty rankings, because it kind of shows, like, you know, it's really tough for me, and I'm sure, James, you can maybe echo this, that doing, as we both do dynasty and prospect rankings, and prospects, I think, are a little bit easier. When you dynasty, you have to kind of compare, you know, how aggressive do I rank the young prospects like a Raniel Rodriguez, who are still, you know, a year or two away, against the, you know, the veterans, like, or even like the 26-year-olds that are already there. So that's a really, how tough is that for you sometimes to figure out, like, where do you slot a guy like that's 18, 19, or like, even like a Walcott or these guys like that, Jesus Mate, against like a, you know, a Drake Baldwin or a Hunter Goodman? Like, how tough is that for you when you go through your process?
It's very hard. I mean, doing, like, I love doing the prospect rankings, but the dynasty rankings are much more of a, like, obligation. like I just don't think it's really possible to put together like a perfect set of dynasty rankings, just because it's so dependent on league to league, format to format, and even just manager to manager. Like like how much do you want to trust in the 18-year-old shortstop? How much do you trust your ability to just continue to get prospects and continue to turn them into big leaguers and win that way? Like, there's just so many different ways to win in dynasty. So making the rankings, it's just really hard. I kind of try to just think of, put myself in my own shoes and kind of in a generic league, am I more likely to prefer this player or that player? But you know, it's so challenging. And like, you know, the Raniel example, if I'm extremely confident in this player's bat. Like I would invest in it confidently. But if you're just someone who kind of looks at rankings, but like he doesn't trust prospects that much, like he's a catching prospect, is that going to affect his ability to develop as a hitter, that type of thing? Like, there's nothing wrong with just skipping to the next guy on my list. Like, I think that's the key with using dynasty rankings, is just using them as like one tool in your toolbox, along with your own work, along maybe multiple sets of dynasty rankings, that type of thing. I mean, it's just, it's such an inexact science, and they're just not going to be super, super sticky. Like, you really kind of got to use them, but not like really, really lean on them to a great extent.
Yeah, no, that is very spot on. And a lot of the issues I've dealt with too, with my own rankings, and you know, another wrinkle is, you know, the contending manager versus the rebuilding manager. So like, you know, Rodriguez obviously is a lot more valuable to a rebuilding manager, or maybe a contending, you know, win now team might not, you know, be as interested in any of the, you know, 18-year-olds or something like that. So yeah, that's definitely very tough. I just wanted to get kind of your thoughts as another, you know, a veteran ranker in this industry, of kind of how you weighed that, because that's always something that, you know, really, you know, tugs at me every time I'm updating my rankings. It's very, very hard to balance that. But, you know, we've talked about some of these guys that, you know, might move off. And so it's kind of like digging that a little bit more here before we head to the next set of part of our rankings here. And there's several guys in these rankings that you can say there's some level of concern, whether it's like, you know, 25% or 85% of them losing eligibility, you know, whether it be this upcoming year or in the next 2 or 3 years. I think the four bigger names are Ivan Herrera, who again already maybe has lost it depending on the games played threshold in your league, Semyon Basayo in Baltimore, obviously with Adley there, and Augustin Ramirez in Miami, defense with him not the greatest, and then Ben Rice as well. So, you know, any of these guys that you're maybe confident in not losing it, James? Like, you think any of these guys maintain it, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road? Or are you pretty concerned that all these guys, and maybe even another name I didn't mention, are going to be losing that catcher eligibility here in the next year or two?
No, I think Rice is just the big one. Like, I think it's just completely possible that Rice doesn't even catch at all this year. Like, maybe he does. Maybe he even gets to 20 games caught by the All-Star break. Like, you never know. But, like, he's the one where I would not be surprised at all if he's just not even close to qualifying a catcher next year. I think Herrera, Basayo, Ramirez are catcher eligible next year. Herrera, you know, there's a great point about the Cardinals and their catching prospect depth. Probably have the best, you want to go five deep on your like organizational catcher depth chart. They probably have the best catching depth chart in the majors. But I still think just from a roster management standpoint, like they would have to trade a lot of their guys to just find room for Herrera to play mostly at DH. So I just think they're going to have to play him at catcher enough for him to qualify. And he's not a bad defensive catcher. Like, he's definitely a hit first catcher, but I'm kind of operating under the assumption Herrera is going to be catch eligible for the foreseeable future after this year. And then Basayo and Ramirez, I think, are kind of similar in that I expect them to both lose catch eligibility eventually, but not for 2027. I would say maybe 2028, 2029, you'll see Ramirez and Basayo lose it, but I think they catch enough in 2026 to keep it for at least another year.
Yeah, Ramirez is the one I was going to hone in on, because you know, I do think that the catcher of the future in Miami is Joe Mack. And I do think that Ramirez is more of like a, you know, first base slash DH type long term. I would, you know, absolutely love to keep him a catcher, because I think, you know, a guy that, you know, potentially, you know, legit has the skills to go like 25-15, which, as you know, like the steals from catcher are super rare. And you know, even to get a guy with five is rare these days. But when you get like these kind of, I don't want to use unicorn, but it kind of is in a way where you don't have these double-digit steal catchers that often.
No, I think he is he is kind of a unicorn right now. Like it's always fluctuating, like what the sort of top of the mark is for steals at catcher. But like I think Ramirez, like his ceiling this year is just so high for a roto. Like he could play every day, like he could play like 150 plus games and go like 30-20 at catcher. Like that would not surprise me at all from Augustin Ramirez. Like he's got easy plus juice, loves to run. He's pretty good at it. And he's like, as long as he's hitting, like if he regresses at all as a hitter or is just kind of about as good as he was last year, he's probably not going to play every single day, but he could be better as a hitter than he was last year. And he's like their cleanup hitter. They can't take him out of the lineup. And he's just racking up these homers and steals. So like, I think he is kind of a unicorn as long as he keeps the catcher eligibility and as long as there aren't other catchers emerging as these like 15 steal threats. But I agree with you about Mac. And I think at their heart, this Marlins org is really kind of a defense first org. And so once they start kind of getting serious about winning, they're going to stop playing Ramirez behind the plate.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, Mac is a guy that's going to be sticking behind that plate. Like zero question about him sticking behind the plate. You know, one of the better, you know, catchers out there in the minor leagues. But yeah, Ramirez, I've always been a big Ramirez guy. I mean, I saw him come through Double A, you know, when he's still back with the Yankees organization a few years ago, seeing him that series, I saw him, I was like, man, like I was just immediately enamored with the bat. Like everything he was hitting, even the outs were hard. And that's really continued to translate. Like, you know, you mentioned the juice, and even though he only hit 230, I mean, the contact skills are not bad at all. I mean, it's 86% zone and right around 74-75% overall. So I think you can definitely see that average tick up. So yeah, a 30-20 season with a 260 average, I think is, you know, that's a lot for a catcher, but that's the fact that it's at least a possibility with Ramirez and not just completely, you know, totally crazy to say that. It just shows like the upside. He might have the second highest upside among catchers, just given the added steal. If he's getting the 20 steals and he had 16 last year, I mean, he went 21-16 as a rookie. So, you know, why not 25-30 home runs and, you know, 18-20 steals in a second year? I think that's definitely possible. But yeah, a lot of these guys, yeah, I do agree. Rice is probably the most likely out of these four to lose it. I'm kind of similar on Herrera and Ramirez. They're kind of in a similar range to me in terms of like percent to lose it. And then Basayo, I think I'm the most confident in him keeping it, but I feel like he's more 50-50. So none of these guys I'm like super confident in keeping it, you know, past the next year or two. But I do agree. Like, I don't think any, you know, outside of maybe Rice lose it after this year. I think the other three keep it at least into 2027. But it's always fun to speculate on that for sure.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Let's move into the next set of our rankings here. We'll go 11 through 20. So, James, who do you got in those spots?
I've got Ivan Herrera at 11, Kyle Teal at 12, Carter Jensen at 13, Gabriel Moreno at 14, Alejandro Kirk at 15, Adley Rutschman at 16, Yainer Diaz at 17, Salvador Perez at 18, Dalton Rushing at 19, and Moises Ballesteros at 20.
So we actually start and end the section of our rankings with the exact same player. I have Ivan Herrera 11, Alejandro Kirk 12, Josue Briseño 13. He's another guy that might lose catcher eligibility eventually, but I love Briseño so freaking much. Carter Jensen 14, Yainer Diaz 15, and then 16 through 20, I have Kyle Teal, Raniel Rodriguez, Dalton Rushing, Francisco Alvarez, and Moises Ballesteros. They're at 20. So starting with Herrera, going to Ballesteros, but a guy that you know, I had in my top 10 and you had at 16, you know, probably still one of the biggest names at this position, just given, you know, former number one overall pick, former, you know, number one prospect overall in many places, or at least an elite prospect and all the hype that came along with it. But Adley Rutschman kind of, you know, has, you know, that star has lost good bit of its luster over the last couple of years, where you know, he's been, I think, lackluster is the best way to kind of describe it. You know, 2024, 250, 318, 391 slash line. Still had 19 bombs, though. Last year, limited to 365 plate appearances, 9 home runs, slash line 220, 307, 366. But, you know, he's still only 27 years old. Still has some good metrics under the hood. Still has a good, you know, lineup around him in Baltimore that just got even better with the addition of Pete Alonso. That's a really maybe one of the better lineups, 1 through 9, in all of baseball. So there's still some positives here. So James, would you be, you know, looking to maybe buy low on Adley in a dynasty league right now if you were looking to maybe upgrade at the catcher spot?
No, I mean, obviously, you know, if I'm ranking him set at 16 among catchers, I'm probably not looking to buy. You know, he's basically been worse every year in the big leagues.
That's true. Yeah.
And I don't really see like anything under the hood where I'm just like, oh man, like he was just really unlucky last year, or like he's doing this one thing really well and like he could really surprise people next year. Like it just kind of feels like a blind bet on his pedigree, which I would be much more open to if it seemed like he had like a clear path to getting up to, like, you know, in 2023, he had 687 plate appearances. And then he had 638 plate appearances in 2024. I just don't see any way he gets anywhere close to that. And I think he's his skill set, he has to be kind of one of those compilers where he's just playing so much, like a William Contreras type, where he's just playing so much, he's racking up all these counting stats. But if you got Basayo there and you got the DH spot and first base all like spoken for, I think the name value, like he's not bad at all, but like the upside's capped, and I think the floor, as he showed last year, is pretty low.
Yeah, no, it definitely is low. You know, the one thing though I'm holding on to is the fact that like the metrics haven't really, you know, those haven't really gone down. The surface production absolutely has, but like, he still makes plenty of contacts, well above average contact guy. The power is, you know, kind of middle of the road, you know, but he's right around league average in barrel, average EV, hard hit rate, so it's a good approach. So You know, maybe he never gets back to being top five catcher, and I don't think he will, just given all the, you know, talented names we've already discussed that I like a lot more than Adley. But, you know, I still think there's some decent metrics there. So that's why I'm still holding out hope that maybe he can still flirt with top 10, you know, value at this position. You know, he did hit a lot more ground balls last year, and a lot less pulled fly balls. That kind of, you know, factored into it a bit. But, yeah, Adley definitely has lost a lot of that luster. And if they want to keep getting, you know, keep Sayo's bat in the lineup, and maybe he starts playing some more catcher, so maybe you see Adley, yeah, not be that 600-plus plate appearance guy anymore, kind of like you were mentioning. So definitely spot on and 100% agree on that. But you know, if I was looking for a catcher in a deeper format, I guess I'm not 100% opposed to buying low, depending on what the price is. But I'm not, like, super enamored with Adley. I'm not, like, running out, like, oh, I got to go get Adley. He's a great value.
You know, I mean, it's not – I mean, you make a good point. Like, there, it's not like the – like the hard hit data is like steadily gotten worse. It's really about just the playing time output that would, and what I would perceive as his value. Like if his owner just wants to be out of the Adley Rutschman business and makes that pretty clear, then I might buy low because he might just be selling way too low. But, I assume his manager is not going to want to sell him as like the 15th or 16th best catcher.
Yeah, probably not. They'll probably still hold on to that name value. You know, that name value is still plays a big part in trades, obviously, in dynasty leagues and, you know, really all kind of fantasy leagues. But, you know, a couple of AL Central, you know, young catchers here that both debuted in 2025, Carter Jensen with the Royals and Kyle Teal with the Chicago White Sox, and both performed, you know, pretty well in their debuts. Teal .273, .375 OBP, .411 slug, with 8 home runs, 3 steals in 297 plate appearances. Jensen didn't get as much playing time. You know, he's still prospect eligible, but 69 plate appearances, .300, .391, .550 with 3 home runs and a lot of red on that Savant page. So, you know, I feel like we both have them in fairly similar spots in our rankings, James. I mean, you have Teal 12, Jensen 13, so back-to-back and not that far off in the top 10. And I have them, I have Jensen, 14, and Teal 16, so both pretty close for both of us. You know, do you think, you know, looking when you look at the profiles of these two guys and then just given the names ahead of them that they will have to leapfrog to do this, do you think either of them, you know, have the ability to, you know, take that next step and, you know, become just annual, you know, top 10 options at this position?
I think they will both be top 10 options at the position eventually. I think like Kyle Teal, they're just almost like kind of opposites to me. Like Kyle Teal is just so good across the board, like so safe. to have like that kind of a debut rookie season as a catcher, like I think he just killed it, and I think there's room for growth. I don't really see Kyle Teal ever being drafted kind of where we're taking like William Contreras, Shea Langeliers, Ben Rice. Like, I don't think Kyle Teal ever gets in that range. But I think he could be a top 10 catcher by ADP for like 5 straight years, but he's probably going to be going in that like 6 to 10 range. Whereas Jensen, I think he could be a top 3 catcher someday, but I also think it's possible he's like not even a top 15 catcher some years. Like he's more of kind of a fluid profile. Teal, I think, is just so safe. Like I'm valuing how reliable I think Teal is going to be over the next 5 years. But I think Jensen, like the power data that he was putting up, especially over like the last couple months, just really kind of insane. And like he didn't even hit a skid in the majors. Like you would expect, you know, you'd expect him to just kind of hit a wall, but he didn't. And I love the Royals' lack of position player talent. as it pertains to Jensen's playing time, because I just don't think they have enough good hitters to keep him out of the lineup, even with a fully healthy Sal Perez.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Where it feels like their lineup is almost like the Stars and Scrubs. It's like, oh, you got some, you know, you got like four or five pretty good guys, and then the other half of the lineup is just like, what is going on? Like, you're still starting like Jonathan India and Michael Massey and Kyle Isbell. It's just really. Then you got like, you know, Michael Garcia and Bobby Witt and Vinny P, and maybe Jack Hagelin can bounce back. But yeah, I think Carter Jensen definitely has that. You know, right now they haven't penciled in as the backup catcher on roster resource. I don't really think that's the case. I think he'll get enough playing time between catcher and DH. I mean, Jonathan India, A, is not that good anymore, and B, obviously has durability, major durability issues. So I think between catcher and DH, you'll see Jensen play enough. But yeah, I feel, you know, if either of these two are going to take that big jump, I do agree that's going to be Jensen. And he's one of those guys where every time I either like write about him, talk about him, you know, look at my rankings, you know, I feel like I just keep liking him more and more, to the point where, you know, I'm probably even going to bump him up even more before my next update, because also, you know, the hard hit data is just like so damn good, and the contact skills aren't that bad either. They're pretty solid contact skills too. So yeah, it's just profile.
I also think Jensen and Teal are both these like 5 to 10 steal catchers, which I just love.
Yeah,
just a sprinkle. Like they're not necessarily double digit steal guys, but just they're not going to be like one or two steals.
Oh, absolutely. And I've always said I like getting my steals like a little bit from everywhere. I mean, I don't like putting my eggs in the Chandler Simpson basket, you know, even though he's fun. But I don't usually like to go with those types of guys, because if they get hurt, and then you're kind of, you know, screwed in that category. So anywhere you can get steals, even if it's a little bit five, six, seven steals from catcher, that all adds up in the end. So yeah, both these guys showed that they, you know, the willingness to run in the minor leagues, which is, you know, part of the stolen base equation. But yeah, I like both. I'm a little bit higher on Jensen, especially on if we're talking about upside. I feel like Teal can kind of stay in like that, you know, for me, that 10 to 15 range, maybe back in top 10. And I think Jensen go a bit higher than that, maybe be in that 6 to 8 range. Maybe never get to that top five, but I think he can get pretty darn close, especially if the contact skills we saw from him last year kind of stick to go with that elite power. Now, it was elite both in AAA and in the majors. We're talking like a 58% hard hit rate, really, in both areas. Super high barrel rate, you know, just below 20% in AAA, just above it in the majors. So, yeah, I'm loving the bat more and more with Carter Jensen every time I kind of look at him. But, yeah, I think both these guys are pretty good buys right now in dynasty leagues. Two other names here, you know, one is, you know, actually, I think, but neither one of them are prospects anymore, but Dalton Rushing and Moises Ballesteros, you know, guys that are, you know, have been, you know, high end catching prospects over the last handful of years, you know, that have struggled to get that playing time in the major leagues. You know, Ballesteros was in AAA for the vast majority of 2025. Rushing was actually up a lot, but just not playing more than like once a week or like twice every 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So it was just really sporadic playing time, to the point where I feel like Rushing graduated due to service time like a month and a half before he actually cut over on at bats, which is just a massive gap between those two. But you know, Will Smith is still there, yeah, you know, in Los Angeles. So, you know, are you still like looking to invest in these two long term? Like, I know obviously it's very much format dependent, but you know, do you still think these guys will, you know, find that playing time, you know, whether, you know, it's in their, you know, with the Dodgers and Cubs respectively, or if, you know, maybe if the Dodgers end up trading Rushing in the deal at some point, but are you still in on these two guys and to the point where that you think they'll get playing time at some point here in the future?
Yeah, I am. And I've been getting higher on Ballesteros basically since the end of the season, and I like was doing like a full deep dive on him, because I'd always kind of discounted Ballesteros because I was pretty confident he wouldn't stick at catcher. I'm still pretty confident he won't stick at catcher. We, you know, we're talking about him here, but he is UT only, and I think there's a chance he pulls a Ben Rice and gets it back, but I think that's, you got to just view that as like, you know, just a bonus. Like, you shouldn't be banking on Ballesteros getting catcher eligibility back. But I'm just over the moon for his bat. Like, maybe he's just a strong side platoon guy here in year one, especially, you know, with the Austin signing that they just made. But, you know, at least against righties, Ballesteros is going to hit for a really high average. He's going to do a ton of damage. He can hit really good pitching. Like, I think he's a playoff caliber, like, number five hitter down the road. So he's tough because I do think he will be UT only for the bulk of his prime. But I think if someone's just kind of soured on Ballesteros because he's UT only, because they don't think they can count on him anymore as their catcher of the future, and if you've got – you're in a league where you can use a UT only guy who's going to be hitting, like, above 275 with 20-plus homers, I think you try to find a way to get Ballesteros. Rushing is kind of been trending down, obviously, for everyone.
Yeah.
But he's still 24, and the only negative data point in his profile really is his big league sample. And it's, you know, it's tough to get a real rhythm going when you're playing that infrequently, and you probably feel like you need to hit a home run to get another start within the next few days. So I think he is a prime buy low from just the way the season played out standpoint, but he does need a trade to be a usable piece. You're still kind of, he's no longer prospect eligible, but you want to be able to treat Dalton Rushing as just a pure spec on your dynasty roster where you're not relying on him for production, especially early in 2026. So, you know, if Rushing had gotten traded to the Nationals, like, instead of Harry Ford, I mean, it would just be such a party. Like, Rushing, I think, would be someone we would have talked about a lot sooner on this pod. But
yep,
as it stands, I think he's just basically a guy you got to stash and just hope that he finds his way into playing time somehow.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Ford. Like, Ford and Rushing are the two guys that has been hoping for, you know, a trade. You know, guys, obviously, they very much blocked at the major league level, and one of them got that trade, and I'm hoping that Rushing gets a trade here this offseason, because, you know, as long as Will Smith's healthy, and, you know, for the most part, I mean, he did miss some time last year, but for the most part, Will Smith has been, you know, a guy that, you know, does catch a good amount of games. So, you know, without him getting injured, I just don't see where Rushing, you know, gets that playing time. I did hear some reports, who knows how much validity there was to them, that the Dodgers want to or are trying to get Rushing in there more. I just don't see it. So obviously you're not going to play him over Smith if Smith's doing his thing. You know, DH is kind of clogged with that dude named Shohei Ohtani, so you're not going to get him there. You know, they kind of tried Rushing a little bit at, like, first base and outfield, but even those spots are, you know, first base, obviously, is Freddie Freeman, outfield, Teoscar, Edmund Páez. So there's not really any, unless he can figure out second base and upseat Hyesung Kim. I mean, obviously, it's not happening. But, yeah, I feel like there's a trade that's needed. But I still think that, you know, Rushing is a really good buy low. And just because, like you mentioned, the he's been dipping for the last couple of years now. The fact that he gets price tag is not that high whatsoever for the most part. And, you know, I still think there's a really good player in there. And I think you hit it right on the head when you kind of mentioned, like, you know, when you're not playing that often, you have to kind of really press and kind of get outside of your comfort zone to try to do something when you start. Because this, you look at his, just look at the strikeout to walk rate with Rushing in the major leagues, 37.5% strikeout, 6.5% walk rate. That is not who he was in the minor leagues. And I am not one to think that you're going to see that drastic of an approach shift in, you know, 155 plate appearances in the major league. So I think that just instantly shows that he was just kind of pushing and trying to, you know, do more than he, you know, probably should have. So yeah, I'm still very much in on him, and I like Ballesteros a good bit as well. I mean, we're pretty close in our rankings. You have him 19-20, I have them 18-20, so very similar rankings there. So yeah, two guys I think they're still pretty good buys overall. Go to the last set of 10 here, 21 through 30. So these are more guys that maybe have some upside to jump up into being C1, you know, one catcher league type guys, or obviously if you play in two catcher leagues, you know, these guys are, you know, obviously pretty good C2 options. So James, who do you got 21 through 30 in your rankings?
Yeah, so 21, Josue Briseño, 22, Joe Mack, 23, Francisco Alvarez, 24, Austin Wells, 25, Dylan Dingler, 26, Logan Ohapi, 27, Ryan Jeffers, 28, Edgar Caro, 29, Carlos Narvaez, and 30, Alfredo Duno.
I'm glad that you have Carlos Narvaez where you do, because I had so many people that when I, you know, post my rankings that said I was like way too low on him. And I think I have him, he's not even in my top 30, is he? Oh no, he is in my top 30, but yeah, I think we're pretty close on that too. But they're like, oh, you should have him top 15. I'm like, I don't really see it. Even as a Red Sox fan, I don't really see it. But no, he was a fun little player.
I'm sure it was mostly Red Sox fans that were pushing.
Oh, him. Probably, which is funny because I am also a Red Sox fan, as people know. And you know, that's what I'm like, he's fine. He's a decent little player, but I'm not putting him like where I have like Kyle Teal or something like that. So, but my 21 through 30, I have Austin Wells, Logan Ohapi, Gabriel Moreno, Alfredo Duno, and Tyler Stevenson at 25. Dylan Dingler, Edgar Caro, Ike Irish. Freaking love that guy. Carlos Narvaez at 29. And JT Realmuto, old man Realmuto at 30. Maybe I should keep bumping him down even further than that. But it's how the mighty have fallen. This feels weird ranking like Sal Perez and JT Realmuto at 29 and 30. But when you're a 34, 35-year-old catcher, you know, it kind of is kind of the business right now. But yeah, the one guy I really wanted to talk about in this section of the rankings, but I think it's still a really good talking point, and there are still many people out there that are very high on him. So I feel like you see a wide range of rankings on this guy, and that's Francisco Alvarez with the Mets. I mean, he came up back in 2022, and since then it's been just a massive mixed bag. I mean, that was only five games in 2022. But in 2023, you know, he hit 25 home runs and just 423 plate appearances. You've got to love that. But he hit 209 since then, 237, 307, 403 slash in 2024 with 11 dingers, 100 games. Last year, also 11 dingers in 76 games, 256, 339, 447 slash line. And, you know, under the hood, you know, pretty all over the place, some good, some bad. So where are you at this point on, you know, Francisco Alvarez long-term? And obviously, I know you have him ranked, you know, outside of your top 20 at this position overall. But, you know, do you think, you know, A, it's a good time to buy Alvarez? And B, you know, assuming the answer is yes to that, do you think he can kind of get back to maybe being a, you know, a starting caliber fantasy catcher in single catcher league? So up to like that top 12 to 15 range, do you think there's still that outcome for a Francisco Alvarez?
Well, you know, I think honestly the answer to all those questions is like I don't know. Like he's just tough to figure out. I think the injuries and the fact that he's such a small from like a stature sized catcher, I think it's potentially taking a toll on his body. And, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, like William Contreras and Shea Langeliers were battling for like my number two spot in large part because of how many plate appearances I expect them both to get. I just don't have any trust in Francisco Alvarez to get over like 400 plate appearances. So he could, if he gets 500 plate appearances or even 550, like he's going to have a big time power year. I just, you know, I know the Mets value catcher defense. I know nobody gives a crap about Luis Torrens, but I know the Mets are going to play Luis Torrens more than Francisco Alvarez's fantasy managers would like. And Alvarez, I think to certain types of pitchers, just given his stature and given like his bat speed, like he loves to like ambush, you know, pitches that are kind of, you know, belt up high. But like, I just think good pitchers can get him out, especially good righties can get him out with spin. And so I just, I don't really know what to do with him. I like the raw talent, but I've never liked the body. I've always kind of, when he was a prospect, I was kind of the lower one on him just because I thought the body was going to age really poorly.
Yep, same.
So it's just, he's a tough one. I see the per plate appearance upside. I think he's a great guy to have in like a daily moves league. But yeah, obviously outside my top 20.
Yeah, he's always been a tough one for me. And I think I was kind of right there with you back when he was, you know, maybe at the peak of his prospect hype. And, you know, I always had him ranked like, you know, well, I didn't have him like, you know, super low, but I feel like I was lower than probably like the average ranking on Alvarez. And like I said, there's still some good there. He still has, you know, hits the ball really hard, 54% hard hit rate, you know, 12% barrel rate. It's all really good. Still walks at a decent clip. And my contact skills have been pretty fluctuant, but that's one of the reasons why, you know, I'm not super in on him. Like, I think there's some bounce back potential to some degree, but 74% zone and 65% overall contact rate, those are pretty concerning. And yeah, to your point, you know, with Luis Torrens, I mean, I think it shows wonders to how valuable a guy is defensively when a guy that had a 79 WRC plus and a 629 OPS got nearly 300 plate appearances last year. This speaks wonders to what he brings on the other side of the ball defensively, and you know, the point where they can put up with him being, you know, basically a near zero offensively. I feel like maybe if you combine Alvarez and Torrens together, that'd be a pretty darn good overall catcher. But yeah, I feel like Alvarez, maybe he gets 400 plate appearances, but 500, no, I just don't see that. And again, those contact skills are pretty concerning. So yeah, I think he gets up in like the mid-teens range some years and maybe even pushes top 10 in others, but consistently I just don't see it with Alvarez. So what a good, a lot of bad in that profile. So he's always a difficult one for me to rank. Before we get out of here, James, you know, we've talked to a lot of guys here, but let's talk one more each. You know, for guys that we haven't talked about, or maybe it's another guy, you know, we already have talked about that you want to dig into more. Who is in your opinion a really good buy at this position for whatever reason? Maybe it's a buy low, or you know, a buy that you think they're going to break out. Who's a guy that you're really targeting at this catcher position heading into 2026?
So if I was in a league that really is deep at catcher, where like everyone's, you know, where 30 plus catchers are getting started, I'd be going after like Dylan Dingler, Edgar Caro type guys. Like, I think Dingler and Caro could both be ranked like 5 to 10 spots higher in a year. But in shallower leagues, those guys are on the waiver wire. So I'm going to say Shea Langeliers, just because I think I would be wanting to trade for him in all formats. And it's completely possible that his owner has no interest in trading him, and that's the end of the discussion. But like, I've got him ranked 3, and he's closer to 2 than he is to like 6 for me. So if his owner just thinks like this is kind of like a top 10, top 7-ish catcher, then I would try to give an offer that kind of bowls him over and gets me Langeliers for the next 5 years. But yeah, I mean, I love catchers. I could throw out like 5 more names at you.
Yeah, I think there's actually a lot of good values for one reason or another at this catcher spot. Yeah, I think Dingler's a good one. I mean, I think, what did he let me see if I can pull it up real quick. Because given what he brings, you know, defensively too, while being still, you know, a solid offensive player, he ranked like super high in F4 this year. I think he might have been like 2 or 3 at this catcher spot. Let's see. Yeah, he was, oops, I have to actually drop the qualified plate appearances. Yeah, he was 4th at this catcher spot in F4 this past year, tied for 3rd actually with Will Smith at 4.1, and then Kirk was 4.7 and Raleigh 9.1. But yeah, Dylan Dingler, I think, is a really solid, you know, guy. 13 home runs, .278 average. You know, pretty decent little player there in Detroit. And I'm gonna go with a guy that I feel, you know, is still, he's still, you know, I think ranked fairly high, but has lost a little bit of that luster the last year or so, given what happened this past year. And that's Yiner Diaz with the Houston Astros. I mean, average dipped, you know, nearly 40 or actually over 40 points from the previous year. You know, OBP dipped below 300, or yeah, below 300. OBP dipped to 417. So it was the worst slash line of his career. Still popped 20 though, but only had 56 runs. You know, he's one where obviously the very, very hyper aggressive approach and the, you know, super high chase rate are going to cause a lot of peaks and valleys. And you see it, you know, Sidon Rafaela, another great example of that, where they'll look like a you know, fantasy top 50 player overall at times. And then other times you're not even wanting to start them for a few weeks. So, but overall, you know, contact skills are still above average, both in zone and overall. Still got, you know, a solid quality of contact as well. 9.5% barrel, 42% hard hit, keeps K rate below 20%, just does not want to walk, but usually he puts the bat on the ball. So I think you see a nice bounce back in those, you know, in the average and in the slug. That slash line could tick back up. And I think he still has a chance to being, you know, a top 10 catcher, but he'll just be maddening to roster given the inconsistencies, but still a good player with good metrics under the hood. So I think he's just a decent value target right now in dynasty leagues. But so wrap us up, James, again, thank you so much for coming on. Always a pleasure, you know, talking ball with you. Anything you want to plug here going on over at Rotoball before we get out of here?
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, Eric. I'm actually doing a surprise update to my dynasty rankings next week. As like a Christmas present, since I'm not doing a podcast next week. So check that out, rotowire.com, and follow me on social media at RealJRAnderson, and I'll tweet everything out.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Check it out. James is one of the best in the business for many reasons. But thanks again, James, for coming on. Thanks to everyone for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back again next week with First Base Prospects and First Base Dynasty. Got a couple of guests lined up for those. But until then, everyone take care.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.